Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Welcome to The Kitchen Table. We're a show that focuses on social issues through the vehicle of food. A kitchen table can be a prime vehicle for social change. It is a social gathering point for communities, enabling everyone to talk, listen, and share ideas on subjects of mutual interest. There are no right or wrong ideas, and everyone's contribution is valuable. It makes up a varied condiment set, if you will. The Kitchen Table examines issues important to the wider Australian community with a focus on minority groups, including the LGBTQI sector. A key focus of the program is to normalise the LGBTQI movement by showing how the minority group isn't the only one battling prejudice or having to enter a David versus Goliath fight. I'm Shannon Gillies, and I'm joined today by Christian Vega and Johnny Lemon. And today we talk about how food unites cultures and social causes.
Amazing. But
yay, we're all here.
Yay. Oh, and thank you to Simon for a very extended version of Silver Sounds and finishing on, I feel like, a rather appropriate song from The Lion King, The Circle of Life.
I did enjoy the dancing in the studio.
Oh, it was amazing. There was a bit of a reenactment for people who can't see what's going on in the studio.
I was being Simba and Shannon was holding me up. I felt very privileged.
Everything, childhood fantasy. Everything the light touches is yours.
Oh, sweet. And it's sunny outside too.
Amazing.
Watch out for dodgy uncles.
So, Shannon, you've put this show together. You've dragged us into the studio.
I did, and I felt really good about that.
Amazing. So what's your show about?
So the show is really about using food as a, as I said, a vehicle, but basically an instigator of talk and discussion around, you know, relevant issues in the community, because I don't think there is enough focus on what else is going on out there. Like, I know there is this big focus here. I mean, it's a gay and lesbian radio station, but there are so many more issues out there. And I feel that sometimes when I've been working within the sort of gay sector, that people sort of become so, not insular, but sort of they think this is the only fight. And so I kind of want to let people know that there are other groups out there, that you don't have to feel so alone. You've got the asylum seekers, for instance. We've got those groups getting supported through the community. We've got, say, the East West Link protesters.
Yeah.
There's a rally happening on Tuesday that we'll be going to just to find out what that David Goliath fight is. I mean, you've got the community going, hang on, this is a bit bizarre, and you've got the government going, actually, we need this.
And certainly the number of conversations in the community that happen around these relevant issues do happen usually around food.
Food brings everybody together.
Yay.
So what better way?
So this is a really good opportunity to not only talk about those social issues, but the actual food itself.
Yeah. So we'll be doing that, as well as we've got a segment which will be part of it. Unlike other radio shows, we're also going to have a video segment where we get to teach you how to cook.
Through my terrible attempts at cooking the listeners' submitted recipes.
Yeah.
So if you have a family recipe, submit it eventually when we set up all the Facebook pages and everything, and I will attempt to cook it because I can't cook to save my life.
Amazing. We do have to go to a song right now. You're on The Kitchen Table with Shannon, Johnny and Christian. If you'd like to interact with the program at all, you can do so by texting in on 0427 569 949. That's 0427 Joy 949. We're going to a track right now. It's 10,000 Maniacs. Candy, Everybody Wants. You're on Joy 94.9.
Bring joy to the world. Listen to us everywhere. Download the Joy smartphone app now at joy.org.au.
You're listening to Joy 94.9 and you're on The Kitchen Table. Now, I'm totally going to quote a report from Christian Reynolds from the University of South Australia. It's titled Diplomatic Gastronomy, The Nature of the Power of Prestige, Culture, Diplomacy and Soft Power. And it's all about how food basically aids diplomacy. Food is an ever-present object in society, a common object that is communal across history. It is consumed daily to sustain life, yet full of secondary meanings and symbolism. And this relates to basically why food is so important to all of us and how it's gotten me out of many a scrape.
Food is my savior when I get dumped all the time.
Really?
Yes.
Well, food's also that sort of traditional point around a lot of people's day where it's an opportunity to be with other people. So while I think a lot of the time we do eat on our own, it's really easy to go, hey, do you want to go grab something for lunch? And you're with somebody else.
It's the best excuse to socialize.
Absolutely.
I mean, how many people go out and like, hey, let's go sit in the park, don't do anything and just talk? Because you need that kind of thing to have a reason to get together and talk.
Yeah.
And that word just escaped me, but it was a really clever one too. It was on like my word of the day calendar. Never mind. Continue.
It's nothing along like, because food instigates discussion. Because I mean, when you go out with people to have food or say beverages, it's never just you go, hi, now we're going to sit here in this corner and not talk at all.
Mm. And certainly I think when you're talking about, I mean, the bit that you just read out was referring to things like diplomacy. Quite often when, you know, when you do have to have those more difficult conversations, it feels like food probably would make that conversation a little bit easier. I mean, certainly you do have a reason to get together, you know.
Yeah, I remember with you pointing to Johnny Lemon, talking about getting dumped and going to food. I mean, I remember from getting dumped on this particular occasion, but it was done over a salmon cream cheese and pineapple cranberry pizza.
Amazing.
The pizza was amazing.
As you're getting broken up with, it was over that?
Yeah, so the pizza was great.
That at least it made it memorable.
Yeah. I mean,
that's a good way to soften the blow.
Yeah. It certainly would. Yeah. It heals a lot of wounds.
It does. Is there anything salmon can't solve? So basically my background is I was a chef.
Mm-hmm.
And I trained for a couple of years in Wellington, New Zealand. And the idea with having cooking as my trade was that no matter what country I was in, if anything happened, I would always be able to cook my way out of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas other sort of, I don't know if you can do that for BA. I don't know if you can be in the middle of Syria and go, hang on, I've got a BA, guys. Whoa.
I've got the solution to this problem. It's have cake.
Yeah. Cheesecake.
Just make it.
Mm-hmm.
Just put it.
My background with food is I'm pretty much can't cook to save my life.
Uh-huh.
And the reason why I want to do this show and sit here with the lovely Vega and Shannon is because I need to learn how to cook, because I'm a 25-year-old person who does not know how to cook. And I'm like, I need to learn. Like, I love eating food and I resort too much to ordering pizza. So get me some kind of recipe to follow and I need to teach myself.
Amazing. Well, I thought I would summarize my approach to food with a song. And here it is. And when we come back, we will be going to some messages, but I'll probably talk about my relationship with food. You're on the kitchen table here with Shannon, Johnny and Christian.
You are on the kitchen table on Joy 94.9 with Shannon, Johnny and Christian. And we have got a couple of messages in. We've got one from Ash and Craig in Dandenong, which said, hello, Shannon and Johnny and Christian. Good to hear
you
guys.
Yeah, leave me out, guys. Yeah. Thanks.
Just add that one in. Good to hear you guys. I love the circle of life and the demonstration you explained. Sounds about right. Thank you, Ash and Craig. And we also have one which says, we need to send our warm regards to the staff at the Stoke House, which saw their restaurant burn down last night. Many memories for the St. Kilda institution for many Melbournians.
Aww. It really was horrible. I was working that night when it all happened, and then all the news streams began to come out and Twitter went alive. And you just see going, this is horrible. This is somebody's livelihood, and it's just
And it was such a Melbourne institution. I don't know if you guys ever got to go to the Stoke House, but certainly living in St. Kilda, it was one of those staples. If you wanted like a really chill, nice night out and a really awesome meal, you'd go to the Stoke House. And I certainly had a few friends who'd worked there over the years. And it was just, it was one of those, you'd always expected it to be there. So to actually see it burn down was really sad over the week. But
Oh, it sucks. It really does.
Yeah. Where am I going to go for wine? Oh, many other places.
Well, you're in Melbourne.
So, Christian, you're going to tell us about your relationship to food.
My relationship... I love food and... It's a rather erotic relationship. If people who are my Facebook friends know that I post a lot of food porn, and I think it's I think for me it comes from I don't drink. So while most people go, oh, let's catch up for a drink, my sort of way of socializing is through food. So yeah. And quite often I'm like, a lot of my other friends don't drink either. So we would go out, and when you think of how much money people would spend at a bar over the weekend, we kind of go, oh, I can kind of justify spending a lot of money on food.
Yeah, that is a good point, because I always think to myself, I'm not going to go to a restaurant because it's going to cost me like $40-50 or something. And then I think to myself, how much money do I spend when I go out drinking?
Exactly.
It's got to be massive. Like, so maybe if I just stop drinking, well, I actually don't drink that much either, but maybe if I just stop going out for drinks and go out for an actual decent meal, then I'll be able to get up to speed on all the cooking and food stuff.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell is foie gras?
Oh, it's
delicious,
it's,
but
it's
naughty.
It's delicious, but there are huge ethical things about eating foie gras.
Mm-hmm. So,
which we may explore later in the show.
Speaking about things that scare me for reasons to eat and cook, we have a list, Shannon.
We do. This is from the food blogger Smitten Kitchen. And basically, they asked for their followers to send in their cooking phobias. And they've got about 8. And this is, I think, weeded down from about 368 replies they got. Mm-hmm. And the chief one they went with, which I'm surprised with, is our mother or mother-in-law cooks it better. Whether it is out of respect, difference, or certainty that your version will pale, it seems that many of you are, you know, don't even want to touch dishes that others, you know, claim as their own.
Mm.
Yeah, it's like attempting to cook your mother's lemon chicken or something like that. You would be too afraid to do it because it would pale in comparison.
Yeah, I remember eating someone's, I think it was just pea and ham soup, and you think, that is not delicious at all. But my God, it can be amazing. Like, you're like, yeah, just put it in my face.
Mm.
And I had never felt that way about it before. And I remember telling the person who made it, I'm like, my God, this is better than my mum's. Because I thought, honestly, that was something that mum totally had taken down. But no, she's like, you really can never tell your mother that.
Yeah, I don't have this phobia or this anxiety because my mum wasn't, oh, she's so going to kill me. Thank God she doesn't listen. Hi, mum. She wasn't that great a cook, and quite often I didn't like a lot of the things that she cooked. So, you know, my parents are from the Philippines and they do a lot of sort of traditional food. A lot of it is seafood and I'm allergic to a lot of seafood. So I ended up having to sort of break away and come up with my own meals. So I think that's what's also started my love of food, is I had to make it myself.
Yeah, I remember training and you'd experiment on your parents and, you know, your family members and stuff, and just the amount of times, like, if you failed and it would just be driven home to, like, what is this and what are you paying for? And my God, is this boiled chicken? Shut up, mum. So yeah, at my, that's not really a food phobia for me because I'm just like, no, just be quiet in the corner.
There are other food phobias. So the next one along is the food police have scared us.
That is my food phobia.
Mm-hmm.
It's because I know too many people who cook really well and I'm just like, you know what you're talking about. I don't know what I'm talking about. So I'm just not going to attempt it.
Oh, see, and I think that's a really, you know, sad way that we've actually treated each other. Because food, I mean, everybody has to eat. Like, it's just the bottom line. I mean, no matter how much you try to avoid it, you do have to eat.
Even if you're one of those people who's like, I don't eat food for taste or fun, I eat it only for fuel, you're still cooking it.
Yeah.
And you even still want it to be tasty.
Some people insist on shoving it into a cup and shaking it, but it's still something, right?
Why do you flavour it with strawberry sachet powders? Obviously, flavour counts.
Hmm. Another one of the food anxieties that they've listed there from Smitten Kitchen is it went really badly last time we made it.
Oh, you need to get through that.
Yeah. You burnt the quiche? Wow.
You served undercooked roast chicken to someone you were dating and very nearly got food poisoning.
Okay, well, that was you.
That's why I had to actually Google how to roast a chicken because I had no idea, and apparently I didn't cook it long enough.
Oh no! I think you need to find some safe food.
Yeah, I think there's this big key thing to get over this sort of phobia. If any of you out there have this phobia, it's okay. Just move through it. Find maybe 3 dishes and just nail them.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, I think people try to cook, like, they think cooking is this really big, complex hard thing to do. And I'm like, nah, there's dishes that I cook, and for dates as well, that are, you know, five ingredients that take 15 minutes to assemble, and they're amazing.
Yeah. It's just basically about just preparation and maybe getting over pride, or maybe just develop a lack of shame.
Shannon's going to teach us all about that. On to the next anxiety. And it's kind of related to that one. And it's that we jinx ourselves. I think this whole, you know, worry that we're going to fail.
Yeah.
Often
yeah.
comes out of it. Whereas absolutely. I think everyone's an amazing cook.
As long as they're feeding you, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, just, I will fix it.
Just need some salt and pepper.
Yeah.
No, just a tip. Fine. Just a tip in here. And baking, just make sure you follow the recipe exactly how it's there.
Oh, God.
That's the only part of cooking, which is everything else, like hot kitchen, larder, fine. You can just go nuts and you can variate. But with baking and patisserie, you really need to work it because it's the closest thing we've got to a science.
Yeah, my mum tends to deviate a lot from a lot of recipes. And she's like, oh, look, I invented this new recipe. But she basically just started cooking something, forgot the recipe, and then added in new ingredients. Mm-hmm. So she's kind of raised me on that notion of just wing it. And I attempted to bake the other day, actually, Osha, I was telling you on the phone, because I tried to make like scones or something.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any caster sugar. So what I'd used instead was brown sugar and icing sugar. And I don't know what it turned in. And I added cocoa as well, because I was like, oh, why the hell not? Yeah.
Creative.
I thought, oh, this would be great. And I bit into it. I'm like, why is this so bitter? It doesn't taste really good. Like, I added sugar. I don't understand. So.
I'll be honest. Yeah. There was this one time that I did forget to add sugar to the Belgian biscuits, and I caught them in time before we served them to customers. Totally caught it in time. And I told my supervisor, and he's like, look, we're going to serve them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then we charge people money for them.
Oh, I see.
Did you get
that
complaints?
Management knew. Not that I heard of.
Okay.
And I think that's certainly the next anxiety that they identified was getting your head around the steps. Like, cooking is a process, and sometimes that process can be quite daunting, and sometimes we leave things out. But, you know, I think, as I said before, if you can put together a recipe that's sort of bulletproof, that's, you know, not that complicated, but is amazingly delicious, I think they're sort of sure ways to success. I think we'll be sharing some of these recipes, some of my recipes, certainly, in the coming weeks. But moving along our list of anxieties, because we've probably got about a minute to go in this discussion.
Okay, we're afraid of wasting an expensive ingredient, and I believe that because, especially if the price of vanilla pods, three of them, over $15?
Oh, wow.
Jesus Christ, Madagascar. What have you got going on? Well, welcome to my Tahitian vanilla pods. Jesus Christ.
Vanilla pods are delicious. Yeah.
Beans.
One of these things. So basically, many of you there, lots of her complaints about cooking phobias with reference to large cuts of meat and good fish, where the price of making an error seems so steep, a flop is at much more of a risk. And we all get that. And it's a big blow if it's a pricey dish.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, if you buy seasonally, and that even also relates to fish, then it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be at a much lower rate, expensive-wise.
Hmm.
If you have any cooking phobias or fears, why don't you message us in on 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au.
Yeah.
That's it.
There you go.
We've got a song coming up. What is it?
It's Lemon.
Yeah.
For Johnny Lemon. Haha, see what we did there? You're in the kitchen table here on Joy 94.9. You're in the kitchen table with Johnny, Shannon and Christian. Shannon, what are we talking about during the next little segment?
We're talking about how food breaks down social and political barriers and basically how it's been used throughout history.
Amazing.
And what you can look at from the very emergence of man when he decided to roll out of a cave to the current state of Australia's parliament. They've always used food as a meeting point. Like, people would, in the very early days, gather around fires and they'd exchange stories and stuff. And right now, when our political leaders meet, they're always at sort of gatherings like the G20 or the APEC or other summits. And it's always through food and culture.
I think they should redesign that. What's that big government room where the PMs yell at each other? What's that called?
The chamber?
Yeah, the chamber. They should redesign the chamber to be like a medieval chamber, though, and then have like a big buffet of food in the middle.
They would throw food at each other. Have you watched that one?
But it would be more entertaining for us to watch.
Yeah, and maybe they might calm down a little bit.
Yeah.
If, you know, if you had a big suckling pig in front of you.
I know I get tired when I eat, so if they eat, maybe they would be as revved up to argue all the time. They'd just be like, oh, who cares?
All right. Do you think they're all hangry?
Yeah, I think so. Being stuck in that room for so long, they should get like one of those big chicken leg things.
Amazing, Shannon. You put together a show that is going to promote world peace.
I know, free food.
Amazing.
What's going on? Israel, do you need a brioche?
I love your approach.
Oh, look, so back to Christian Reynolds' report on diplomatic gastronomy. He talks about the seating of the dinners, sort of like both the table and the venue. And it's another long-standing power signaling device. Like where you sit at the table says a lot about how prominent you are in your group. So from feudal times, the placement of diners had been a contentious issue with matters of rank. So like you'd have the captain. I mean, the captain is not going to sit with the lowly foot soldier. That's why in the army they've got the officer's tent and they've got the, you know, people who they're happy to let get shot in other areas, which says so much about our wonderful power structures. But the table itself can be an issue of contention with certain table shapes not appropriate to certain circumstances. Say, if you're having the gathering of major political leaders, you're not really going to have them at those small little square tables.
Yeah.
So it's all there, all through food. And basically, there was a discussion through about peace negotiations and dinners between the Viet Cong and the US that, you know, they couldn't go ahead until a mutually agreeable table shape and placement was settled.
Really?
Yeah.
What did they go with? A dodecahedron? Because that would have been useful, right?
Well, the report doesn't say, but I will totally look that up. That sounds amazing. Table placement and seating arrangements still hold great political symbolism. The title of Adley's Guardian article, The G20 Seating Plan, Never Mind the Stimulus, Who Sat Next to the President, illustrates exactly how much importance and symbolism is given to the seating plan of where agents sit at meal events. Adley's article continues to further stress this point, divulging that both the UK and the Italian prime ministers threatened to walk out of the G20 dinner if not assigned seats closer to the newly inaugurated President Obama.
Hmm.
So they were totally willing to throw their toys because they weren't able to sit next to the UKID.
I understand that. It's like whenever I'm sitting at a table, I always want to be like on the corner, not at the head of the table, but like right on the corner next to the head, and then with somebody else on my side, because then that way I'm like, I can have a conversation with you, I can have a conversation with the person in front of me, and then the head, and then the person next to me.
Yeah, you and I can pick at their food.
Yeah, that's
that
a plus.
That happens a lot. I'm a food sharer. I can't help it. That's my sort of approach to eating.
There's a strategy to it.
Yeah, yeah. Feed me. Oh,
nom, 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 nom. sorry, that just went on. And there is a show that we're doing in the future on the Druidism. And we were discussing during our show prep for that how, so depending on how much you follow certain sort of texts, how you're not allowed to sort of eat certain types of food, like every bit of food would have to be kosher. But then once again, that can like cut you off from other food experiences.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Because if you are being true to your religion, then you can't always guarantee that the person who prepared that food made sure it was like 100%. So that basically shuts down discussions.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, Shannon, I was going to ask you, if you're sort of at a dinner party and there's a large group of people, where do you usually place yourself on the table?
Okay, so not right in the middle, not at the end, but definitely off-center a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So generally always to the left. I don't know why, but that always just feels like here. It always leads to interesting conversations.
Mm-hmm. Being on the left.
Being on the left, right. Please, there's no bias coming, crew. Mm-hmm. I just think it's very important to note that throughout history, and especially when it comes to things like colonization, how when people first arrive in areas, it's always through food. Mm-hmm. Like the local inhabitants generally have always been welcoming. Mm-hmm. When you look at, say, the American Indians with Columbus and just sort of like we and the first settlers, we're going to help you out, especially for your first hard winter. and it was a true exchange of cultures. And it was
the tradition of Thanksgiving sort of is loosely based on that.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely not followed by all the enslavement and the young girls for rape and all that sort of stuff. No, not that.
and I think it's traditionally there is that sort of intention and goodwill in that sharing of food, but it's unfortunate that it sort of didn't go further than that.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, whenever you invite somebody over, well, I mean, like, if there's an international person, you always invite them over to have a meal. And it's like, if there's foreigners coming, you're like, have a feast with us. Enjoy Australian cuisine, which is like, you know, bangers and mash. That's what I eat, right?
But yeah, you do that with new people. I mean, I've going traveling, and at one point I was stuck in this place in Scotland, and we all got together and we all sort of like cooked food from our countries.
Mm.
And I think when I was leaving, we themed parties. So we did a New Zealand rural sort of thing. So I cooked a lot of eggs and lots of lamb and stuff. But it was basically just getting everyone involved. So you had people from Estonia, Lithuania, and, you know, of course, Australia. And we all got together and we used that as a way to talk about our countries.
That's interesting. Like, what was the I have to ask, what was the Australian meal?
The Australian meal... She wasn't really good at cooking, so she provided beer.
Oh. That sounds sort of appropriate.
Well, but when you look at, certainly when you look at food guides, when they say modern Australian, what they mean generally is things like steak and veg of some sort. And I think like Australians are sort of loath to say, we're not very cultural or we don't have a culture. It's like, actually, that's not true. We have a very strong, rich culture of, you know, using fantastic local produce. I've just been to Tasmania. Where they're exceptionally proud of, you know, the produce that they create down there. So knowing those sorts of things, that's what shapes sort of Australian cuisine. And when you see sort of the descriptions of a lot of big restaurants, they will say modern Australian. And what they mean is things like locally sourced, things like steak or lamb, you know. And those are the things that, while, you know, we don't really see that as our culture because we're in it, you know. If you certainly went overseas, you could sort of... You have a much greater sense of what that is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of self-loathing when they say, oh, we don't have a food culture. And I think it'll be especially with the huge drives around Australia Day, you know how they're like, oh, it's a Lamingtons, it's lamb, it's all of this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But Australia has a huge, rich food culture. And I think it's just like you said, it's all about locally sourced stuff. Mm. And because Australia is still quite a young country, it is still developing, but it does have a culture. I came back from the UK and people said, did you want anything sent over? There is no food I miss in the UK. there is nothing going on that I say, yeah, this can be sent through the post. Like, their confectionery isn't as good as, I'd say, Australia or New Zealand's. And I'd say Australia is beginning to match them in cider. And, you know, the English pride themselves on what they can produce cider-wise, but I think Australia is definitely going up.
Mm.
And the fact is, the fresh produce is its big bonus.
Mm.
You can't get an avocado in, you know, the middle of Edinburgh and go, oh, yeah, this feels natural.
You know, I have no idea what a fresh avocado actually feels like.
Well, considering this year they're costing them about $5.
Oh, wow.
Apparently, you know, where they're growing, it's having a particularly bad year. Mm. Wait for next year. Okay. I'm not paying $5 for an avocado.
Can you come with me to a greengrocer or something and teach me how to find a ripe avocado? Because I've tried like maybe 3 or 4 times. And each time,
I feel
like,
a future
working.
Show segment coming on. Awesome. You are on the kitchen table with Shannon and Johnny and Christian. We have received a message. Did you want to read that message?
I do. Great show. If only Putin would visit Australia and dine at our lovely restaurants, maybe he would be open to gay culture. The Society Restaurant, Florentino's, and many Italian establishments have had the political classes dined there since the 1930s in Melbourne. This is true.
And that's from Melina. Thank you, Melina, for your awesome message. And certainly there are a number of fabulous Italian establishments that I certainly enjoy. Society is amazing. Upstairs, they do this like really... it's this really amazingly like decorated function room they have right upstairs called Secret Society. You should check it out sometime. Yeah, I'll take you there.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, my God, let's go eat.
I'm hungry now.
The Kitchen Table, the only show bringing you Snoop Dogg, it would seem, and ZZ Top.
Amazing.
Amazing. We're all about diversity.
ZZ Top has totally sold me on TV dinners, by the way.
Well, the part where he talks about, you know, now that I'm red.
Yeah. And the blue sauce or something. That was great.
Oh, I thought he was talking about how the chicken could be slightly blue.
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't listening.
Fail.
Oh.
Oh, my goodness.
What are we talking about next, Shannon?
We're talking about how to survive a kitchen. Commercial and domestic.
Pro tip, don't blow anything up.
Oh, that's the first one.
Oh, yeah. From personal experience, I managed to blow up 2 eggs.
Oh my God, I managed to blow up...
On 2 customers.
Like 15 eggs on myself. Well, not 15. Like, I boiled eggs in a microwave-safe container with water because I was a kid and I didn't know how to boil an egg. But instead of, like, 2 minutes or whatever, I put it on for about 15 minutes. And then when I got the egg, I tried to put my spoon through it and the whole thing just went... Poof! Like, exploded in my face, went all up the wall, onto the roof. It was hot, too. And I was on the phone with my friend at the time, and I was like, ah! And then I hung up. And he called back later. He's like, what the hell happened? I thought you died. I'm like, my egg exploded.
That's amazing.
So that's how I cook eggs.
Maybe we both shouldn't be allowed to cook eggs.
Yep.
So basically, follow recipes and don't feel rushed. Don't feel rushed, because once you feel rushed, that'll be when you make mistakes.
I think the approach to the kitchen should be that, like, you own this, you know? Like, I think people shouldn't be afraid of their kitchens. Like, I think it's, for me, I feel very at home in a kitchen because it's stuff that I'm, like, I love and I'm good at and I can do and I know I can do this stuff. So I think not being intimidated by, you know, complex utensils and ingredients is one of the first steps to being comfortable in a kitchen.
Yeah, and I'd say definitely make sure you've got the equipment that you need for a dish before you break out and decide, that's okay, I don't need a whisk, this fork will do. No, the fork will not do.
Really?
Get a whisk. No.
I've never used a whisk. I always
use
a fork.
I will. What are you making, though?
Like, when I was baking, I was stirring it with a fork instead of a mixer.
Well, that's the other thing is, I think you don't really need complex equipment, you know?
I'm not saying go out and get a $6,000 ice cream machine.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm kidding. That would be amazing. No, they're a lot cheaper these days. But no, I think you can still prepare really good, amazing food, even if it's just for yourself, without too much complicated stuff. I think you need a chopping board and a knife, a really good knife. And I think that's sort of the two things. If I have those things, I can prepare anything. Well, not anything, but a lot of things that I would eat.
Have you seen those kitchen utensils that they sell, which you can tell it's just bollocks? But you know those things, like, it's a herb cutter and it's got 2 handles on either side. And it's just like, yeah, it'll just slice through all of your herbs and all your herb slicing needs. And basically you just rotate it.
So a Mezzaluna?
Yeah.
Just
get a knife.
Yeah.
That's the same job.
Mm-hmm. I gotta say, the one kitchen utensil which I thought at first was going to be complete utter crap, which I saw on TV, I was like, oh my God, I need to get one of those. It's like one of those, it's like you put a zucchini in it or something and then it turns into spaghetti.
Those spiral cutter things. Yeah.
Oh, please someone buy that for me.
Don't. It's a trap.
I would eat zucchini spaghetti if I had that thing. Otherwise, I wouldn't eat zucchini at all.
Is it just going to be one of those things, though, that you do, you, like, it's like when you buy a juicer. You go, man, I'm going to use this juicer all the time. Use it like 4 times before you decide to just give up on all the cleaning.
Yeah, I'm pretty much like that with everything, though. Boys included. I'm kidding.
Zing.
Just kidding.
Zing.
Mm-hmm. Insights into Johnny Levin's dating life. So, Shannon, is there any sort of, like, staple thing that you...
What cook? I think... Anything that I actually cook.
Yeah.
This is my thing. I've recently been told that chorizo is a sometimes food by... I know. My gym trainer sucks. But I have to take her seriously. She managed to get me off caffeine or reduce it. She took me down from 8 cups to 4.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
My bank balance says yes. So... Basically, I do this chorizo harissa tomato dish, which is just so delicious. And there's onions in it and garlic. And basically, you get all the richness and the paprika from the chorizo, which basically just gets into the tomato. And then you serve it on freshly baked brown bread, which you can do yourself if you want to, or there's a place called Sourdough Kitchen where I would just, die. Die for bread.
Yeah.
Basically, any of their stuff, or any basically organic bread is awesome. And then with some rocket and some mayonnaise, especially homemade mayonnaise, just make it, guys. It's just oil and egg yolks. Just get involved. With a decent whisk. Not a fork. With a whisk.
I feel like we need to do a segment on mayonnaise.
Oh, we so do.
Oh, just sauces in general.
Condiments
be,
are amazing.
I love condiments.
Saucy.
I do a sort of grainy salad, and it's sweet because the ingredients aren't fixed. So as long as you have a good grain, and I include couscous in this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So couscous or quinoa or, you know, or barley or anything that you can make a sort of a grainy salad with. And it's a fruit, a nut, a herb, and a spice. So just any of those combinations. So things like pomegranate, mint, cumin, and toasted almonds. And
yeah.
And then, like, griddle up some meat. So it could be, like, racks of lamb or lamb chops. Something really delicious, and just serve that on top. And that's kind of my staple. It's an amazing meal for one, but also a winner at dates.
Oh, I have a winner at date salad. It is raspberries, sort of mesquite, toasted almonds, toasted sesame seeds, and toasted pumpkin seeds.
Amazing.
And any sort of cheese that you want, but you don't need to put cheese in. And just anything like maybe capsicums or some grilled asparagus in it. And you're just like, yeah, if this date goes miserably, I'm okay.
Yeah. Just have a good salad.
Yeah, and still have some for lunch the next day.
My staple recipe, because I know you're dying to hear it.
Oh, go.
Do it.
It's homemade pizza, but with like pita bread as the base instead of like those other bases that you buy. Mm-hmm. And then I put on it pepperoni, salami, chicken, beef, what's that Frankfurt stuff that you buy hot dog meat?
Frankfurt?
Yeah, Frankfurt. sometimes I put, cheese. Did I say cheese already? I put like three different types of cheeses
on. It's a meat fest.
Yeah, and then I put cayenne pepper on top and then chilies, and that's about all the vegetables.
I think people are getting a real sense of our personalities.
And barbecue sauce, because I love barbecue sauce.
Do you find that you put barbecue sauce on things just for those things to be basically a form of transport for barbecue sauce to your mouth?
I go,
that's what I do. There's no way I love bread that much, but you know what? It's better than your flatmate walking in and finding you in the kitchen.
I've run out of like proper meals and just had bread and barbecue sauce before because barbecue sauce is so damn good.
I've actually done that too.
Yep.
Amazing. We've got to go to some messages now. When we come back, we'll be saying bye. This has been The Kitchen Table with Shannon, Johnny and Christian.
You are listening to The Kitchen Table with Johnny, Christian and Shannon, and we have got a text message in from Matt who says that his kitchen phobia is chorizos, knives and commitment. Sorry, thanks, Matt.
That's amazing. It's I'm nice sure there are a lot of people out there in your shoes.
Don't be afraid of the treat, so just own it.
The time is 2:04, Shannon.
It is. It's been a fantastic time with you lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, welcome to your first show.
I know. It's been great. Thank you both.
Not too bad for a first show. It was awesome.
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know how there's that whole cooking phobia list we went through before, and they're like, oh, you know, I screwed up the first time, so I can't possibly go back. We're coming back.
Oh, yeah, we better.
Amazing.
We've got big plans.
What's our next week?
We have a choice. We'll either be going through what it's like to be Jewish in Australia. Mm-hmm. We have a New Zealand special, what it's like being a New Zealander here in this fine land, what it's like to pay tax but not get any representations and not being able to vote and being told all the time that you're a scrounger. And then,
wow.
I know, deep. We've also got upcoming shows. Will include a trip to the Asylum Resource Centre where we'll be talking to real asylum seekers and going, hey, boats.
You know what's amazing about the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre, and people may not know about this, and you should definitely check out their website, they run a catering service.
Yeah, that will be the group that we're talking to, because they also train up asylum seekers so they can actually get into the Australian economy and sort of learn to, you know, work in certain things. We're also talking to a young Māori man about what it's like coming out as gay in your culture. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a very big grid for us.
Jam-packed. I'm looking forward to it.
Jam-packed.
Strawberry jam-packed.
This has been The Kitchen Table on Joy 94.9. You've been with Shannon, Johnny and Christian. Up next is Andy Mack with Three Chords and the Truth. We do have a track of his. It's The Blue Nile.
Thank you for everyone that messaged in.
So, yeah, Melina and Ash and Craig and other people.
Matt. Yep.
It's all right, Matt.
You'll get there one day.
Yeah, commitment and chorizo really aren't that scary.
Look, Kate's totally wrong when she says chorizo, it's sometimes food.
Yeah,
it's totally. An everyday food, Kate.
You're on Joy 94.9.
See you next week.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.